Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai. And in this episode, unfortunately, I've got to walk back some of the assumptions I've made regarding tax-free profit exclusion from a sale of a home. Now, in my quest to simplify life, I was blinded by the belief that the rental property I bought in 2003 would be eligible for the full $250,000 and $500,000 tax-free profit exclusion if I moved back in tomorrow and lived in it for the next 2 years before selling. I believe this to be true because I sold a rental property just in 2017 that was eligible for the full $250,000 to $500,000 tax-free profit exclusion, given I only rented out the property for 2.5 years and had lived in it for 10 years prior. So with this new rental property I'm considering selling, I lived in the property for 2 years in 2003 and 2004, and then have been renting it out for the past 14 years. So even if my family moved back into the rental for 2 years, we'd only be able to get a prorated tax-free profit exclusion equal to the length of time we lived in the property divided by the entire length of ownership. So in other words, our tax-free profit exclusion would equal 4 years living in the property divided by 18, which would be the total number of years we would have owned the property if we had moved back in today for the next 2 years. So 4 divided by 18 is 22.2%. And then I would multiply it by 720,000, which is simply the potential selling price minus the purchase price, excluding all the costs. And that comes out to 160,000. So 160,000 of the profit is tax-free profit. And if I'm at a 27% effective tax rate, which I estimate I am, then the real tax savings is only going to be about $43,200. And to clarify in the above example, as some people are confused by this point, I'm not limited to 22.2% of the $250,000 and $500,000 maximum tax-free exclusion number. I'm limited to 22.2% of the gain. So that gain is then limited to $250,000 and $500,000, depending on if you're single or married. Therefore, at a 27% effective tax rate, I can have a gain of about $1.85 million before I max out on the $500,000 in tax-free profit exclusion as a married couple. So definitely spend some time calculating your number because it's not that straightforward. There are multiple steps to this process. To help further clarify this tax-free exclusion, I invited Amy, a law partner and also a blogging buddy at Yetisaurus, to help highlight some more examples as she went through this exact same exercise. And actually, we went through this exercise several years ago when I was thinking about selling this property several years ago, but I forgot all about it. So this is why it's so important for all of you guys to make sure you write out your financial thesis and explain it to as many people as possible before making a large financial move. This is really critical, folks, because undoubtedly you're going to miss something, as I have missed something, and then the end result is going to be different from what you expected, and that's no good. So for an owner who buys and moves into the property, lives there for at least 2 years, and later sells it without ever renting it out, the exclusion is simple. You get all of it. But for owners who have turned their primary residence into a rental for some portion of that time, the nuances are very important. And so here are three examples. And let's give some background first. So Bob buys a place on January 1st, 2003 for $500,000. It's now 2018 and he's planning to sell it for $900,000. He's trying to figure out how much capital gain he will have and whether he should move back into the property for tax savings. So scenario one. When Bob bought the house in 2003, he moved in right away. He lived there until January 1st, 2016 and started renting it out after that. He plans to keep it rented until he sells. So long as he sells it before January 1st, 2019, all of his use is, quote, qualified use under code 121. So the last 3 years of rental property usage is included in qualified use. That means all of his capital gain is potentially eligible for the exclusion, and it probably is. So his total gain is $400,000, but it's subject, right, to $250,000 or $500,000 capital gain. So if he's single, he can only get $250,000 exclusion, and the rest, $150,000, he's got to pay capital gains tax. And if he's married, then he gets the entire exclusion, so long as he or his spouse meet the ownership requirements, and so long as both he and his spouse meet the use requirements for the property. And another very important thing to note is that you must first pay capital gains on the depreciation recapture, and then you run the math on the exclusions applicable under the code 121. So the depreciation recapture is all that stuff that you got to depreciate, non-cash expense, as a landlord or using a home office or whatnot. So scenario number two is a little bit tricky, and I want you guys to listen really carefully. So again, Bob bought his house in 2003 and he moved in right away. He lived there until January 1st, 2016. So what is that, 13 years? And he started renting it out after that. But it's mid-2018 and he's worried he might not be able to sell it before January 1st, 2019, when his 3 years expires. So to make sure he doesn't fall short of the 2 out of 5 year rule, he kicks his tenant out and moves back into the property on July 1st, 2018. That sounds pretty good, right? Pretty logical. But nope. Bob just shot himself in the foot. The exception for the 3 years of rental property usage only applies if it's after the last date that Bob used the property as his primary residence. So by moving back in, he turned the 2.5 years of rental property use into non-qualified use. Now he has to prorate his gain. And so he's basically resetting the clock after he moved in July 1st, 2018, and he's got to live in the place for another 2 years. So assume he sold on December 31st, 2018. His qualified use ran from January 1st, 2003 through January 1st, 2016. That's 13 years. Plus July 1st, 2018 through December 31st, 2018. And that's a half a year. And his unqualified use was 2.5 years. Therefore, the math is 13 and a half divided by 16 years are qualified, and that equals 84% of his gain is potentially excluded. So if you have a $400,000 capital gain, you multiply that by 84%, that's $336,000. The remaining $64,000 of his gain is subject to tax. So once again, if Bob is married, he's good to go for the entire gain. But if he's not, he can only get $250,000 as a single guy, and he's got to pay the rest in taxes. If Bob continues to live in his old rental, then his prorated capital gains inclusion will continue to grow, but never back to 100%. So for example, if he lived in the property until January 1st, 2022, for 3 more years, after moving in on July 1st, 2018, his exclusion would be 16 and a half divided by 19 years, or 87%. So that's a 3% improvement. Better than nothing, but it's not that great. It's not as good as 100%. So the best thing Bob should have done was kick out his tenants with enough time to sell before January 1st, 2019 to get the full exclusion and not move in before then. So one of the reasons why I thought I would get the full exclusion was because in the past, that is exactly what I could have got. But starting January 1st, 2009, there was a new law that passed where they included this new proration portion of code 121. So before January 1st, 2009, all rental usage before then is a freebie, so long as you meet the 2 out of 5 rule before you sell. So in another example, let's assume Bob rented out the property early on and moved in later. So Bob bought his house in 2003 and rented it out immediately. Starting on January 1st, 2009, the tenants moved out and he moved into the property. He's now considering selling it today. So all of Bob's $400,000 capital gain is potentially excluded because all rental property activity prior to January 1st, 2009 is considered qualified use. So let's get into a little bit more detail and see if we can work through another scenario that is quite common. So let's say Bob buys his house in 2003 and rents it out immediately. Starting on January 1st, 2014, the tenants moved out and he moved into the property. Now we're back into the proration territory again. Bob's qualified use consists of the 6 years he owned and rented it from January 1st, 2003, that's when he bought it, right, until December 31st, 2008, plus the 5 years he lived in it from January 1st, 2014 until he sells it on December 31st, 2018. Because remember, anything before January 1st, 2009 is a freebie and considered qualified. The rental period from January 1st, 2009 through December 31st, 2013, that's 5 years, is unqualified use. Therefore, 11 of the years are qualified out of the 16 years of total ownership. So 11 divided by 16 is 69%. So 69% of the gain is potentially excluded. So $400,000 is the capital gain. You multiply that by 69% and you get $276,000. So if he's single, he can exclude $250,000 of it and pay capital gains tax on $26,000. And if he's married, he gets to exclude the entire thing. I know some of you are probably still confused. I had to reread the examples multiple times and actually write this post and speak on this podcast to actually really understand it. So I recommend everyone who is still confused to either click over to the post and read the examples or listen to this podcast over and over again. Eventually, you're going to get it. It took me a while, but I did. So the bottom line is this. In order to qualify for the full home sale exclusion under the code section 121, 2 out of 5 year ownership and use rule, the non-qualifying use, in other words, if you rent it out as a rental property or use it as an office, after the owner leaves his principal residence, cannot exceed 3 years. After 3 years, you must prorate the exclusion by taking the number of qualified years divided by the total years of ownership if you have lived in the property for 2 out of the last 5 years. If you don't meet the 2 out of 5 year rule, you get no exclusion at all. Nothing, not even a proration. So please be aware. For those of you who've owned rental property for a long time, let's say 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and are sitting on large gains, it doesn't seem worthwhile moving back into a rental property to try and save on taxes. Instead, the best move is to probably just hold on to your rental property for as long as possible to avoid any selling costs and capital gains tax. You'll have great rental income that'll ride the wave of inflation, and you'll have a property that maybe your young one can live in one day. I mean, that's kind of been our plan for a long time. And the other strategy is to do a 1031 exchange and buy a new rental property with the proceeds. After going through this exercise, my family is definitely not going to downgrade our lifestyle by moving back into our two-bedroom rental just to save maybe $43,000 in capital gains tax as a married couple. We want to live life to the fullest now, and it just doesn't make sense to just uproot our lives, pack, move, and then, I don't know, it's not enough. If I was going to not have to pay $150,000 in capital gains tax, I think that could be enough, but $43,000, it's okay. So sometime in the future, we may put the condo on the market once our tenant's lease runs out and do a 1031 exchange in a more expensive property in Honolulu. We'll rent out the Honolulu property for at least 1 year to legitimize the property as an in-kind rental. This is very important because it's part of the rule to be able to defer your capital gains tax with a 1031 exchange. In-kind means basically trading one type of property for a similar, same type of property actually somewhere else. So then in 1 to 4 years, we'll then move back into the property and make it a primary residence just in time for our son to go to preschool or kindergarten. And that's the plan anyway. Or maybe we'll just keep both properties, hire a property manager, and save diligently in order to buy a Hawaii property when it's time to move. Because at the end of the day, it's three of us in a cozy house that we love. And it's not like we're sitting in jail waiting for time to pass by. No, we're just living life as we want to right now. When buying property, I've always felt it's best to buy, to live in and enjoy, rather than to rent it out. The only issue with keeping both San Francisco properties is, of course, I'll need to find some way to make up for the $1 million or more, since I won't have the proceeds from the 1031 exchange by selling the property. So I guess I'm going to have to just save diligently and hustle hard on Financial Samurai and maybe get another job, like, right? I mean, who knows? It's kind of hard to save up $1 million with the pace I'm going at. So I hope these examples help elucidate and clarify this tax-free profit exclusion. Remember, 3 years is the maximum amount of time you can rent out your property or use it as a home office or whatever until you have to start prorating. And remember, you've got to live in it for 2 out of the past 5 years. And finally, don't let the tax tail wag the dog. If you have to pay some capital gains tax, it's not the end of the world. The tax rates are essentially 0%, 15%, or 20%, depending on your marginal income tax bracket. And of course, if you're making big bucks, then there's the net investment income tax and state income tax. So please, when it comes time to make a big financial move where it involves a lot of capital gains tax or whatnot, please consult a tax professional, and also please come up with a thesis as to why you're doing what you're doing. More often than not, you're going to find things that you probably didn't think about that'll help you make a better decision going forward. Thanks so much, everyone.